Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good morning, and welcome to the 101st episode of Cure Talks. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor, Cure Talks, joining you from India. It's with a very heavy heart that we are here today. Our myeloma panel and myeloma community has lost a dear friend and advocate, Pat Killingsworth. Pat was an integral part of our panel, and he has left behind a vacuum that we are still trying to come to terms with. Dear friend Pat, you fought a brave battle against myeloma, and your efforts in educating people on myeloma are incomparable. And more than anything, you are a friend to all of us. As our myeloma panel of Gary, Jack, Cynthia, Matt, and Nick say goodbye to you, we realize that now you have passed the baton to us. We will continue your efforts to share information on myeloma and reach out to as many people as we can so that together we can get rid of this dreadful disease. We will miss you, Pat. With that note, I would like to start today's talk. We are talking about daratumumab and multiple myeloma. My co-host for the evening is Gary Peterson, editor of MyelomaSurvival.com. Supporting Gary are experienced myeloma survivors and advocates, Jack Aylo and Cynthia Shmilevsky. FDA recently approved daratumumab, or Darzalex, to treat patients with multiple myeloma who have received at least three prior treatments. Daratumumab is the first monoclonal antibody approved for treating myeloma and provides another treatment option for patients who have become resistant to other therapies. We are talking to the father of daratumumab, Dr. Torben Plesner, on the use of this drug in treating multiple myeloma. Dr. Plesner is hematologist in the Department of Hematology in Denmark and professor at the University of Southern Denmark. Welcome to Cure Talks, everyone. Before I hand over to Gary to begin with the discussion, I would like to remind the audience that if you have a question for our expert, you can post it on Cure Talks website or mail it to priya@trialx.com. If you want to ask your question live, please press 1 on your keypads and let us know. We will bring you on air to ask your question. With that, it's over to Gary.
Hi, thank you, Priya, for bringing that nice eulogy for us for Pat. I certainly do appreciate that. And I want to welcome Dr. Plesner on the program. Dr. Plesner, it happens to be Danish, so god morgen, god eftermiddag, eller fodda, which is supposed to mean good morning, or for you in Denmark, good afternoon. But my Danish is probably pretty bad. Dr. Plesner happens to be the head of the Department of Hematology at Vila, a hospital, and the founder of the department's clinical research unit. He's also a lecturer at the University of Southern Denmark and has his medical degree from the University of Copenhagen. He is certified as a clinical chemist, specialty in Denmark, as well as an internal medicine specialist, and finally certified as a specialist in hematology in Denmark. He also has over 100 peer-reviewed publications, and in his spare time helps to develop a first-in-class antibody called daratumumab. So, Dr. Plesner, you are amazing in all that you've done, and we are so thankful that you've come to Dr. Plesner, thank you so much for coming. coming to us. Good morning. Or
good morning.
From Mida,
this is
for you.
I'm having a skiing holiday in Italy this afternoon here. But good morning to you.
Good morning. I went through your resume or curriculum vitae, and it's impressive, obviously. And I think the biggest single thing is the fact that you've brought us a whole new class of drugs in daratumumab or Darzalex, and we do appreciate that, and we want to learn a little bit more about that. You know, for all of our listeners. And our listeners generally happen to be, you know, other patients, and they, in turn, aren't necessarily, you know, if you could try to, you know, provide us with kind of a patient-friendly evaluation. But, Doctor, for all, you know, thank you for all your great work, and maybe you can start by explaining what a monoclonal antibody is and how it works, and is this an immunotherapy, or can you explain how it differs from immunotherapy?
It's a pleasure speaking to you, Gary, and thank you very much for the kind introduction. Can you hear what I'm saying?
Yes, it's very clear. It's very clear.
That's good. That's good. I just want to say from the beginning that, you know, a success has many fathers and a fiasco has none. I've been lucky to be involved early in the clinical program for daratumumab, so I could treat the first patients. But definitely, daratumumab or Darzalex has many fathers. You were asking about what is a monoclonal antibody?
Yes, and how it
You're
might,
still with me?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how it might differ from immunotherapy, or is it immunotherapy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll try to make some points here. An antibody is a dense molecule that prevents our body from becoming invaded by microorganisms. Each day we produce many thousand molecules to remain free of disease. These antibodies are polyclonal in nature, meaning that they derive from many different families of immune cells. A monoclonal antibody, in contrast, is derived from a single family of immune cells that has been taken out of an immunized animal and propagated cell culture. The advantages of the monoclonal antibody as opposed to the polyclonal is that it can be produced in cultures in unlimited amounts. It can be modified chemically to behave as a human molecule that does not elicit unwanted reactions when used for therapy. And also, its specificity is very well defined, so we know which molecule it binds to on a target cell like a cancer cell. These are major advantages of the monoclonal antibody technology that was invented in 1975 by a young German scientist, Georg Köhler, working with Cesar Milstein in Cambridge in the United Kingdom. So this has been a major breakthrough in many aspects of biomedical science. Treating with a monoclonal antibody that is now possible, it is one way of providing an immunotherapy, and it has already proven to be very successful in the area of lymphoma, where cure rates have been substantially improved by combining a monoclonal antibody with chemotherapy.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor. That I know that you've worked with it's a very small Danish company.
Danish company is GenMab.
Yeah. It I was looking, and it was it's GenMab. Is that it?
GenMab, yeah.
Yeah, and it's in Copenhagen, and
it has
I was
headquarters
amazed.
In It has its headquarters in Copenhagen and a very important research and development unit in Utrecht in Holland.
Mm-hmm. Well, I looked and the sales were $78 million, which, you know, it isn't a very large company. So it's really a little company that could, and I guess Denmark produced you and daratumumab, so it's the little country that could as well.
It's so. Well, Genmab has a strategy. They take care of the very early development of monoclonal antibodies and explore in phase one and early phase two if this looks like an interesting molecule. And if so, they make an agreement with bigger partners to take it into phase to expand it in phase two and take it into phase three clinical trials, because Genmab really doesn't have the muscles to do so. So in the case of daratumumab, they partnered with Janssen, which in my opinion was a very good choice because Janssen has a great expertise in multiple myeloma. And so it has proven to be a very, very good choice of partner.
Okay. Now, it's a new class, they call it a new class of drugs, and it seems to make all other classes of drugs work better. I remember reading a couple years ago about if you put lenalidomide and dexamethasone with daratumumab in vitro, it worked much better than Lendex. The same thing with VRD, and it just seemed like anything that you put it together with, it worked better than they did by themselves. So, however,
it's certainly true that daratumumab is a new class of drugs for treatment of myeloma. You know, we have for decades had alkylating agents, old-fashioned chemotherapy, to treat myeloma, together with glucocorticosteroids. More recently, from mid 2005. We had new developments with proteasome inhibitors and modern IMiDs, so-called IMiDs, with lenalidomide and pomalidomide as good examples. So we had actually four classes of drugs for treatment of myeloma, and we have made substantial progress with these new drugs as well. But now the antibodies come on stage as a totally new way of killing myeloma cells. And it's true, as you alluded to, that daratumumab may be combined with any set of the previously used classes of drugs, and it's likely to provide additive or synergistic activity with these drugs for killing our myeloma cells.
Okay. And the last part of my question would be, it's right now only approved after three lines of therapy and as a single agent. So when will we be able to unlock its real potential in this combination treatment that you talked about?
You know, phase three trials are ongoing for the relapsed refractory setting. Recruitment has been finished, and we are waiting for data to emerge. For the frontline setting, daratumumab has moved into the frontline. For the frontline setting, we are still enrolling patients into trials, and I would strongly advise patients to possible to enter such trials so we can collect more information and gradually have acceptance from the authorities to move daratumumab from the later stages of multiple myeloma up front where I think it belongs.
Well, thank you. CD38 is present on the surface of most myeloma cells. Is it on the surface of all myeloma cells? And is it present on other cells, which sometimes can be problematic?
That's a very important set of questions, actually. In general, myeloma cells express very high levels of CD38, And that is probably why daratumumab is such a good drug to kill myeloma cells. So there's a huge difference between the level of expression of CD38 on myeloma cells as compared with other cells in the body. When we started up with the clinical trials for daratumumab, we were very nervous about the possible side effects that could emerge, because CD38 molecule is indeed widely expressed on body cells, human body cells. And it was very difficult to make preclinical studies with animals, because there's no cross-reactivity with the mostly used laboratory animals. So we had to jump almost directly from the test tube to the clinical situation with patients. So we were very careful when we started with extreme low doses to look for toxicity or side effects. And very luckily, we have very, very little signal in terms of side effects. We do see with standard dosing of daratumumab, we do see some infusion-related reactions, such as nasal congestion and coughing and asthma-like symptoms that seems to be some irritation from the airways, which could be due to the fact that the CD38 is expressed by the epithelium of the airways. So, but these reactions appear with the first infusion and sometimes in a few cases with the second infusion as well. But it can be managed by premedication. And after one or two infusions, they subside, and we can continue treatment with daratumumab for months, and a couple of years have been done now without any side effects at all.
Okay, well, thank you. I believe that daratumumab makes the myeloma cells more visible to the patient's own immune system. And, you know, as the disease progresses, the immune system gets less effective. So wouldn't its use as early as possible in the disease course, when the immune system is the strongest, improve the outcomes and the efficacy?
I couldn't agree more. We were alluding to the problems associated with CD38 molecules on other body cells before, but certainly there is a set of immunosuppressive cells in the body that also express CD38. And when we treat with daratumumab, they seem to be eliminated along with the myeloma cells. And this seems to release a brake that has been put on the immune system, so the T cells, T lymphocytes that are the soldiers of the immune system against cancer, they are increasing in number in a manner that suggests a specificity, because they are clonal in the reactivity, meaning that families are emerging that we think are ready to attack the myeloma cells. And this this aspect of immunotherapy may be very important. We will have to study that in more detail, but it may be very important, and it may explain why we see so prolonged and sustained benefit from treating with daratumumab. We see early responses within a month, but then we see that the response to daratumumab during prolonged therapy improves with time, and this could be caused by this immunostimulatory mechanism by daratumumab.
Well, that sounds like this drug has a great future. What I'd like to do now is to go to some of the questions from the other panel members. And Jack Iola, are you there?
I am. And it's nice to meet you, doctor, over the phone.
Thank you.
I have some questions. I know that Dara was originally approved as a single agent, and wonder if you envision it really being used as a single agent today, or instead should patients be trying to use it in conjunction with an IMiD and DEX, or get into a trial that does that?
I think I would encourage any patient to participate in a trial if possible. I don't see, except in perhaps in very special situations like prolonged maintenance or perhaps in the setting of high-risk smoldering myeloma, outside of these areas, I don't see daratumumab as a single agent drug. I think for treatment of full-blown myeloma, we need combinations. But I do see daratumumab as a part of the backbone therapy for multiple myeloma. So combinations would be the key to success, except for perhaps maintenance and high-risk multiple myeloma, as I mentioned.
Are there actually maintenance trials there already looking at Dara as a single agent for maintenance?
That is planned and ongoing, yes.
Okay. And when Dara was tested as a single agent, I'm wondering, were there any prognostic factors that resulted in it being more or less effective, or did it work just as well if a patient had various high risk factors?
Yes, you know, we don't have many details on this, the usual prognostic factors, but my personal opinion is that using daratumumab is more like hitting the target with a shotgun, because you have a drug that can attack the molecules on the surface. You're not trying to block a subtle pathway in the cancer cells. You're really hitting from the outside. So this is a major blow, I think, to the cancer cells. So it could very well overcome the usual drug resistance mechanisms. And this may explain why we see the response to single agent also in heavily pretreated patients that are resistant and had prior exposure to both proteasome inhibitors and IMiDs.
And finally, I once heard that it was not possible to design oral versions of monoclonal antibodies. Is that true, or could there be an oral version of Dara?
That's true. What is being done now to facilitate the use of daratumumab in general practice is that subcutaneous versions of daratumumab will be made available. So rather than giving it by the IV route, you'll be able to give it as a sub-Q infusion.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back over to Gary.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. Cynthia Chmielewski, are you online?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. It's kind of early over here. I guess it's early over in Denmark. And thank you for taking your time to answer our questions. My questions have to deal with the first one about the infusion of Darolex itself. I hear it's a very long first infusion, and I was wondering if you could tell us why it's so long, what types of pre-meds are needed with Darolex. What are some of the possible infusion reactions? I know you talked about a few of them that we're seeing and how they could be managed. And I know I've heard concerns from local doctor's offices that are like on a 9-to-5 schedule, that what happens if they're infusing their patient and it's taking 14 hours and they don't have staff there to help, would taking that first infusion as an inpatient be something to be considered? And that's it.
Okay, thank you very much. I would say that the first infusion is a long one to avoid infusion-related reactions, more like 7 hours rather than 14 hours. So
okay.
I think with good planning and pre-medications in due time, you could manage within a usual working day. And after the first infusion, generally you can speed up the infusions to get it in within 4 to 6 hours. So I think it's not that difficult to see daratumumab in an outpatient setting. That's actually what we are doing. Also with the ongoing clinical trials, we give it in an outpatient setting. But you need to plan carefully and start early in the morning. And the pre-medications, as you asked for, were antihistamines, paracetamol, and steroids. Pretty much like when we are using rituximab or other monoclonal antibodies, it's the same strategy. If we do, during the infusion, see reactions to it, which could be like shortness of breath or nasal congestion, we pause the infusion for like an hour, give more pre-medications, and we resume the infusion after an hour observation when the symptoms have subsided. And usually we can get done within a usual working day. And this, I should underscore that this is the first infusion that is problematic. The second infusion is much easier, and after from then on, from the third infusion and onwards, it's really running smoothly without problems.
Okay, good. I hear you're saying a lot about breathing problems maybe be associated with that first infusion. Is there a special need to be taken with people that have breathing disorders like asthma or COPD prior to the infusion?
Yes, that's a risk population where we need to pay special attention. I agree.
Okay. Also, I heard that DARZALEX can interfere with blood typing for transfusions and also about monitoring your IgG protein. Can you elaborate about why this happens and if there's anything that patients should be doing prior to starting DARZALEX?
That's two very important questions. There is a very weak expression of CD38 on red blood cells. So when you infuse daratumumab, it will bind to the red blood cells without causing any harm. This is a very lucky situation. We were expecting that there could be problems out of this, but actually there's no signal from this binding, except that if you want to study the patient's blood type for comparison with a donor, in the case you want to give a blood transfusion, the blood bank could have problems interpreting their findings. So the advice to patients is that they have their blood typing done before they start treatment with daratumumab, so that and have a card on them or have it registered in a computer, so the blood banks will know what was the blood type, is there any special needs for concern, and then you can proceed with blood transfusions without any problems. You just need to take care from the beginning before the first infusion with daratumumab. The second question was that when you infuse daratumumab, this is a monoclonal IgG kappa type protein, and when you have reached a plateau after some infusions, you will see this in many patients emerge as a very subtle M component of IgG kappa type. And if this is the same type as the patient had originally, it can be difficult to claim that the patient is in CR after treatment, because you will have this residual M component that actually is daratumumab. But Janssen has devised a way out of this problem by removing the daratumumab from the patient sample, so you can see what is daratumumab and what is residual M component of the patient's own.
Okay. So, and I guess if you're doing a bone marrow biopsy, you could tell the difference between the two?
Yes, you know, from the beginning, when the patient is diagnosed, we will have a clear image, a clear picture of the patient's M component when it comes to type. Is it IgG or IgA, kappa or lambda? And we can follow it during treatment from time to time, take new samples and see if it disappears as it should with response to therapy. And then when we get down into very low levels of M component, which would be like 0.5 grams per liter, which is a very low level of M component, you will see this small peak of dartsumab that could potentially interfere with your interpretation if you don't use the method designed by Janssen, developed by Janssen.
Okay, good. Thank you. And our final question is, we're all excited about DARZALEX, and we're wondering what types of trials are now enrolling, maybe using DARZALEX as a combination therapy or in smoldering myeloma and the newly diagnosed. Can you give us an overview of what types of trials are out there?
We have a very important trial for the frontline therapy of non-transplant candidates with daratumumab in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. That is, the patients are randomized, so everybody is getting lenalidomide and dexamethasone, and half of the patients are getting daratumumab on top of that. And I think after the French first trial, lenalidomide and dexamethasone is emerging as a backbone frontline therapy for myeloma, elderly myeloma patients in Europe. And with the results from the randomized trial, I expect the combination of daratumumab, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone to be the new backbone for elderly myeloma patients. That's actually 2/3 of the myeloma population. When it comes to younger patients that are in Europe, at least going for hydrotherapy and autologous stem cell transplantation, the good news are that daratumumab does not seem to interfere with stem cell collection. So you can safely use daratumumab in any combination up front before you harvest the stem cells. Speaking about, as you asked, the smoldering myeloma, I think you have to define the patient as having high-risk smoldering myeloma, because many patients with smoldering myeloma can have that disorder for many, many years without developing into a disease that needs treatment. But there are some signs where you can define a patient as having high-risk smoldering myeloma, and those patients, I think, are treated on a trial with a tumor of a single agent, and in some cases also in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone.
Okay, thank you so much for your very thoughtful answers. Gary, back to you.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Cindy. I appreciate it. What I'd like to do now is to open the calls up for people to call in and ask you some questions. So, Priya, could you see that?
Thank you, Gary.
Our
listeners, if you have a question for Dr. Plesner, please press 1 on your keypad and we can bring you live on air to ask your question.
While we're waiting, I've got a question, and that is, you, Dr. Plesner, you had said that to treat early would be better than to treat later, and so I guess that's going to come up later in the in the evaluation. But one of the things that I've always wondered is that about 15% of patients are found in a stage one, about 25% of patients are found in stage two, and about 60% of patients are found in stage three. So it looks like we just do a And I think the, you know, Dr. Morgan from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences brought this up and said it's almost, he called it, you know, a scandal that, you know, we don't find this earlier in the disease progression. And I was wondering, because Denmark has, you know, care for all, and I'm sure you got good records and that kind of stuff. What do you find it better than we do earlier, or do you have the same issues? And is there anything that that can be done that you can see to find it earlier before you it progresses? Because it always is easier to treat, you know, and you have a longer life if found early.
I think you are touching on a very, very important issue. It has been shown that in myeloma you have a clonal evolution during the course of the disease, where the disease often looks quite benign in the beginning, but all the subclones are there. They're present from the very beginning, and with time, with successive courses of therapy, the more resistant and more malignant subclones will emerge and become dominant and finally kill the patient. And I think that is the best argument we have for using the very best drugs we have to kill myeloma cells up front, when the more malignant, more refractory myeloma clones are small in number and perhaps have not developed resistance mechanisms, so we can eliminate them by early treatment. So I think the strategy that has been around in Europe, at least for many years, that one should be conservative and treat with simple drugs in the beginning and keep the more advanced drugs for later use, I think that is a wrong strategy. I think what we have, the data we have, suggests that we should bring the best drugs up front and do our very best to interfere with this clonal evolution that will eventually kill the patient.
Why? That's and how do you know? What needs to be done in order to find it early? You know, when it's in very earliest stages, like smoldering, and or a high risk MGUS.
I think we need to create awareness about this among our colleagues. Many of the early signs of myeloma are quite subtle and are symptoms that you often find in the elderly population, like low back pain. And doctors see hundreds of patients with low back pain and not myeloma. And then suddenly one of the patients with low back pain has myeloma. So it's so difficult to be general practitioner and to be able to make the right test at the right time. Often myeloma is overlooked for even a few years before it becomes a major problem for the patient and evidence to everybody that this is a very malignant disorder. So awareness among general practitioners, among patients, is a key to early intervention and greater success.
Well, thank you, Doctor. And Priya, would you like to?
Yes, Gary. There is. We have a listener, person calling in from 718-983-6757. You are on air. Please ask your question.
Good day, Dr. Plesner and Cure Talk panel. This is Dana Holmes. Thanks so much for taking my call. Dr. Plesner, I'm a smoldering myeloma patient. I actually submitted this question, this round of questions, but I had a moment to call in, so I was grateful I was able to get through. I have high risk to progression features per the risk progression models, both the Spanish and the Mayo Clinic. The risk progression models that I guess everyone really uses at this point. So I would really welcome your thoughts about the Darzalex trials developed for high-risk smoldering patients. Do you believe Darzalex has the potential to be curative or produce a long-term preventive solution in this patient population?
I think daratumumab would be a very important part of this this solution, perhaps the most important part. I'm not sure if daratumumab can stand alone. I like a lot the combination of daratumumab with lenalidomide and dexamethasone, because they play very well together. Lenalidomide is boosting the immune system. Daratumumab is taking, I think, advantage of that. So they go very well together. What we have been seeing is that after 2 years of treatment with the combination of daratumumab, lenalidomide, and dexamethasone, the patients, I'm speaking about patients with relapsed refractory myeloma that are responding to the combination, we see that they become, after a while in complete remission, they become more and more worried about the side effects. And the side effects of the treatment comes from lenalidomide and dexamethasone.
Mm-hmm.
So what I could see was an initial period where the triplet is used with daratumumab in combination with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And after 2 years or so, one could perhaps continue with daratumumab as a maintenance therapy.
Mm-hmm.
What is really going on in the patients, we cannot tell you, because what we see is just that the signs of disease have disappeared. The M component is gone. There's no clonal myeloma cells in the bone marrow, and the patients are doing very well.
And these are this is the refractory and relapsed myeloma group?
This is the group where we have 2 years and more of experience. Yes.
Wow.
So for the smoldering myeloma, I think the result will be even better.
Mm-hmm.
But the balance between, I'm sure the DARA should be on all the way, also in the maintenance setting.
Mm-hmm.
But the duration of the, you could call it a kind of induction therapy,
mm-hmm.
with lenalidomide and dexamethasone in combination with daratumumab. What I see is that the side effects become more troublesome after a couple of years.
Because of the Rev and the Dex, the Revlimid and the Dex.
Because of the yes, the Revlimid and dexamethasone. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee such a trial being developed for smoldering patients? Or is it too
risk.
Early because of the monotherapy trials really haven't been completely accrued yet?
I think we'll have to do the monotherapy first. But we know from the Spanish study, I'm sure you're aware of that,
mm-hmm.
that lenalidomide and dexamethasone makes a difference as compared to watch and wait.
Mm-hmm.
You can criticize this study because the smoldering population was not very well defined, because they used conventional X-ray to determine if the patients had osteolytic lesions or not, and we know that it's not sensitive enough because CT scans are needed to provide the best sensitivity. So probably in the Spanish study, we had patients with real myeloma with osteolytic lesions that could have been found by CT scans.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, I think what we have learned from the Spanish study published by Mateos and her colleagues is that treating myeloma early is a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
before damage
has... Well, that sounds exciting, because from a patient standpoint, from a smoldering myeloma patient standpoint, the watch and waiting is for the birds, to be quite honest with you. Dr. Plesner, is there a way to determine who would respond to Darzalex before beginning treatment? Is there a way to test the cells to see if it would actually work?
No, I think you had to jump on the treatment, jump into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about, is this a long-standing antibody, or do you, in other words, once you stop using it, do you lose the actual antibody? It doesn't remain in your body forever.
No, it disappears within a couple of months.
A couple of months. Okay. Mm. Well, thank you for that insight.
You'll have to stay on therapy.
Mm-hmm. Which of the three trial arms do you feel would be most beneficial for the smoldering patient? I'm presuming it would be the intense arm, which is the long-term arm.
Yes.
I know they haven't been able to answer the questions yet, and that's why there are three trial arms. But from what I'm hearing throughout this discussion, it just makes sense that intense arm is the one to stay on, to have this Darzalex consistently in your system, particularly if it doesn't remain in your body long-term.
Yes, I agree that the continuous treatment seems to be the answer. We are all dreaming about cure of myeloma.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we need to achieve this goal, but definitely the early treatment of high-risk smoldering myeloma would be one area where you could be successful.
Mm-hmm. If a smoldering patient were to engage in this particular monotherapy trial, and down the road someone developed a trial combining it with Revlimid and dexamethasone, could a patient potentially cross over into such a trial? Or do you think they'd be excluded?
If you're on a trial, you cannot jump to another one. You'll be excluded. But if the treatment is developed and approved, then you can leave the trial without any problems and then go on an approved type of combination.
Okay. Dr. Plesner, thank you so much for your insight and for your time today. I very, very much appreciate it.
A great pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy
thank
Italy.
You, we have a caller, listener calling in using 602-309-1177. You are on air. Please ask your question.
So, Dr. Plesner, my name is Robert Jameson. Thank you for being here this morning. I have two questions for you. Of course, one of them relates to the diagnosis part of multiple myeloma, and then the second one, I'd like to talk about testing along the way after you're on Darzalex. So I was 58 years old when I actually initially went to my knee doctor, and he did a SED rate test and realized there was something wrong with me. He eventually put me back to my primary care physician, who did another SED rate test and determined the same thing. He sent me to a rheumatologist who did a SED rate test and decided I had MGUS, who finally sent me to a hematologist. The hematologist did blood testing on me and determined that I had an M spike and was just going to watch it as smoldering myeloma. Eventually, and this is about a six-month period of time, my calcium level got to 20, and I wound up with hypercalcemia in an emergency room, and one thing led to another where they finally brought in the oncologist and was able to do a bone marrow biopsy and determined that I had indeed multiple myeloma. My question on this first part is, if my hematologist sees that I have an M spike and it's high, why isn't he compelled to do a bone marrow biopsy? I feel like I went from stage 1, or actually smoldering myeloma, to stage 3, which was where this was diagnosed, while I was being bounced around to specialists and wasted a lot of time and could have improved my overall prognosis. Okay, so that would be question one. Question two, because I became a myeloma patient, and I'm being treated at MD Anderson over in Gilbert here, which is great care. I'm grateful for them. I was put on a couple of different regimens. What worked best for me in the long run was Revlimid. Eventually, I had a stem cell transplant, and unfortunately, it failed after about 6 months. I have an IgA disease, and my kappa light chain ratio climbed within about a two-month period. So they started me on Darzalex. I've had 3 infusions now, and my question on this part of it is, why do I have to wait for 8 weeks before they do the first blood test, at least, to see how my kappa light chain ratio is? So those are my 2 questions.
Yeah, you know, myeloma can be a very tricky disease to diagnose. When you see a patient with an M component, did you have a complete M component with a heavy chain, or was it just light chain?
Light chain.
Light chain only.
Yes.
I think in Denmark we would do a bone marrow examination up front with a kappa light chain signal. And as part of the workup, we think that it is essential to use the most sensitive technique to reveal bone disease, which could be the reason why you developed the hypercalcemia. So in our hands, a CT scan of the axial skeleton is a standard of care. On top of that, we use a conventional X-ray for the extremities and the skull.
Right.
So this will be with the bone marrow, our primary workup. And then we would look for evidence that this situation needs intervention, it needs treatment. And if you heard me before, I think that early treatment is important to have the best results before you have emergence of more resistant and more malignant clones. So early treatment is the key to success. Why you needed to wait for, you said 8 weeks before you had testing of the kappa lambda ratio?
Yes, that's what my schedule shows. I'm being infused for every week for 8 weeks. Then after 8 weeks, they're going to do a test to see how it's working. That's kind of my question.
Okay.
I'm just so not familiar with the drug. Why are we waiting 8 weeks? Is it just take that long before you?
We would do the testing of the M component or the kappa lambda light chain ratio on a monthly basis. That is every 4 weeks.
Okay. All right.
Just to make sure that we're on track.
So 8 weeks, 4 weeks would be early enough to see a change if there was going to be one?
Yeah.
And I guess I do have a third question. What do you think the percentage of efficacy is with all patients now? You know, I was never in trials and never really had refractory to anything. So, and I know this is a little bit of a loaded question, but what is the efficacy going to be for all patients on Darzalex? Like, what would make it fail right out of the gate?
Or is the experience we have from trials that relates to patients that are heavily pre-exposed to standard therapy like IMiDs, lenalidomide, pomalidomide, to proteasome inhibitors such as bortezomib, and in some cases also carfilzomib. And also the majority have been transplanted. So what we know is that this heavily pre-treated population of patients then, and that we can achieve a response in about 1/3 of the patients. But if you are starting earlier on daratumumab, your chance of having a successful outcome is much better. I know that daratumumab is is approved in the United States as a single agent therapy. Can you use it in combinations? Is it permitted now? Is it supported, financially supported by your system? The reason why I'm asking is that I think that daratumumab is doing great on its own, but it's much better in combination with lenalidomide or perhaps even pomalidomide.
In my case, what they're doing is they're doing the Darzalex with dexamethasone.
Yeah. Mm. So you were not refractory to lenalidomide?
No. The only reason they stopped it was, unfortunately, I had blood clots, and those turned into pulmonary embolisms, so they took it off.
Yeah.
It actually worked very well, and I was
so
close to the end of the therapy, they just decided to go ahead and move forward with the stem cell transplant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, no, I worked well with it. It just, and then, of course, afterwards, they tried to use it as a maintenance, but because it's so toxic, it was just beating up my blood numbers, and we just couldn't get them back. So that's when we decided to switch over to the Darzalex.
You know, I do have patients that have had complications on the lenalidomide, like pulmonary embolism, but
yep.
I put them back on therapy after a while with a combination of low molecular weight heparin and aspirin. I use both types of anticoagulants to prevent new thrombosis from developing. So I think it could be done in a safe manner to resume the lenalidomide dexamethasone therapy if you have daily low molecular weight heparin along with aspirin. So you are inhibiting the coagulation system in two different manners.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because one of my comments to the oncologist was that they put me on a lenalidomide, but they did not put me on any anticoagulants. So I was very susceptible to any of the side effects when it comes to that it was going to happen, and sure enough, it did. So only afterwards did they finally put me on warfarin to use as an anticoagulant. It was too late then, right?
Yeah. I'm not very fond of warfarin, but I think in your case you could safely resume the lenalidomide dexamethasone if you have this dual anticoagulation therapy with low molecular weight heparin as in combination with aspirin.
Yeah, it's a bit of work to get the anticoagulant rate correct, you know, and it's finally they've taken me off of that now that I'm on the the Dexmeth or the Darzalex. I'm glad to be off of that. Anyway, I'm very anxious to see. And in my case, they're going to wait 8 weeks. I'm anxious to see what the results are.
I hope the best for you.
Thank you very much,
you.
And I appreciate your comments. And thank you for being here.
Thank you. We have just two more minutes. We could just take one more caller. Person calling in using 720-371-6410. You're on air. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning. I am Nikki D. Temple, and appreciate your time and experience. What has been your experience with Darzalex and late-stage plastocytoma?
The question was not easy to hear, but I think it's the question is what is the experience with Darzalex and extramedullary plasmacytomas?
Yes.
Yes.
My expectation is that they will be sensitive to Darzalex.
Have you seen this in any trials at this point?
We do see patients responding, including patients with extramedullary disease. Yes, and We can follow the extramedullary disease manifestations by CT scans, repeated CT scans, and we can see them disappearing, yes.
Thank you. I appreciate your efforts, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Our hour is up. Dr. Plesner, thank you very much for that informative session. Gary, Jack, and Cindy, thanks for your participation. This talk will be made available on CureTalks website along with its transcript. We will be continuing our talks on upcoming immunotherapies and myeloma with Dr. Saad Usmani in March. Please visit curetalks.com for details of upcoming talks. Thank you very much, everyone. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye. Doctor. You did a wonderful job.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to be with you.